It's the True Penny Show at the G1 for Wrestle Talk TV.
Hello and welcome to the True Penny Show. My name is James True Penny. This is my show, and welcome back to our G1 Climax coverage for 2018, the 28th G1. And this time, we're at a 3-day run at Currican Hall, the most legendary Japanese wrestling venue I can think of. Shikaba First Ring, but it's not as big as well known as Currican Hall. And the New Japan guys spent 3 days there in a row doing some awesome stuff. These were three cracking cards. I really enjoyed all of them. And to join me today for the first time on the True Penny Show is Christy from New Japan Pro Wrestling Gifts and from Wrestling Sexism. How are you, Mom?
I'm great. As I told you, I'm really hot because the weather is awful here, but I know that's the same for you, so we can commiserate together.
Yeah, it's 30 degree heat here. It's just the right thing for sitting in a darkened room and watching wrestling, to be honest.
Well, the dark room gets hot too, so...
Yeah, I have a guitar room at my house, and I was up there playing today, and it's just completely blackout. We don't let any light in because obviously guitars need to be kept at a constant temperature, and even in there it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's awful.
It is.
And you have to sit still for wrestling. That's maybe the good thing, but oh, it's terrible.
It is indeed. So then, Christy, what have you thought of the tournament so far, and what do you thought of the G1 in general? Because we're 6 days in now, things are starting to see some patterns. What have you noticed?
Well, I think the quality is absolutely amazing so far, especially for the B block, which I think everyone maybe agrees on. Mm-hmm. Those matches have been great. I've got some on my favorite list for the year already, and we've only had about 6 days, so...
Yeah, it's been astounding. There'd be some really, really good matches. I was really impressed. K-Hall's an interesting venue because, obviously, all wrestling companies go there all the time, sometimes run 3 shows a day there. And it'd be easy to get complacent, but they're also got the biggest, most loyal, educated wrestling fans in Tokyo go to K-Hall. And it really showed because the tournament matches were outstanding, all of them. If you actually look at the cage match listings, which I'm doing now, everything on the first night got three or more stars from Meltzer and was cage match recommended. Everything.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it was, including the first match, which was Sanada versus Tama Tonga, and Sanada won by disqualification, I believe, in this one. Did he actually win this one? I can't remember if he won by pinfall.
He won by the Bushi roll-up thing.
Oh, yes, of course he did. Now I remember.
Everyone talked about it.
Yeah, this was, I mean... Tama Tonga's on fire at the moment. He's literally burning bridges as we speak with various people on the internet. He's taking this character incredibly seriously, which he has to do, and he's gone back to the roots of Bullet Club, because this is what Bullet Club was like in 2013. I remember watching it back then and going, this is incredible. You can't do that in New Japan Pro Wrestling. But they did, and they're doing it again. What old is new again? And Sanada's had a really good tournament. He's looked fantastic. What are your thoughts on this matchup?
I really enjoyed it. I think when this match was happening, I tweeted out that something like, if it wasn't for the fact that they are in opposing factions, these two could have a fun friendship. Because I think they have a lot in common. They're both athletic, they've got a strong character, and they're focused on athleticism and stuff like that. But Sanada is more the cool indifference, whereas Tama is nothing but emotional rage right now. So I do think they have a lot in common, so it makes for a fun match.
They were also, in their prior characters, meaningless baby faces that were going to go nowhere.
Yes, and they're very handsome.
True, they are very, very handsome, and they both have abs for days.
And very interesting hair.
Yeah. You obviously have the True Penny Show groove because you're talking about hair.
Well, you promised me you'd do a hair episode one day.
So we will do. We're still planning on how to do that. There was a big thing, like the G1 came up, and there was the G1 special before that, and we had to look at some... We will get to it. I promise we will get to it.
You think the G1 is more important than me?
No, not at all. We don't think the G1 is more important than you, but we do this every year.
Okay, fine.
And we will make sure we do it when we finish the G1 as a thank you to coming and joining us on the G1 okay. coverage. Okay, then the next matchup was Zack Sabre Jr. Versus Toru Yano in a match I was really looking forward to watching, and I was thoroughly enjoyed because it was awesome. Toru Yano versus Zack Sabre Jr. It throws back to the matches of my youth of sneaky heels and technically adept baby faces, but this is completely switched around. So instead of like guys like Cat Weasel wrestling Johnny Saint, this is the badass heel is the technical wrestler, and Toru Yano is the sneaky baby face trying to get away with stuff. And I love Yano. Everyone knows I love Yano, but this match was astoundingly good and really showed up both what they could do. And Zack Sabre Jr. had an amazing match with Yano. It was probably the best match Yano's had in a year since that match with Minoru Suzuki last year. And Zack Sabre Jr. looks like an astounding bet for the tournament now. What did you think of this, Christy?
I really enjoyed it. I won't say I'm a huge Yano fan normally, because I get a bit... I find it dull when the comedy is the same thing every match.
Yeah.
I can enjoy comedy when it's subtle and it changes, and Yano has been the same for a long time, so I really enjoy that he's mixing it up. And also the serious wrestling, because you never know, is he going to go back to his old ways? Is he going to be serious? What is he going to do? And I loved that Zach basically taught him that your old ways are wrong. They're going to make you lose. And
yeah.
It turned out to be true. So.
Yeah, it was just so good to watch. I could watch Zack Sabre Jr. wrestle forever and a day. And it was a 10-minute match as well, which is much longer than what Yano actually normally does.
Yeah, he had to make an effort this time.
Yes, got his work boots on for the evening.
Yeah, and he wrapped up Zach in the guardrail, and that one really made me laugh. No, Zach wrapped him up in the guardrail.
Yes.
And he almost didn't get back in time in the ring.
Yeah, it was the throwback to last year when he tied up a bunch of people. He tied up Yuji Nagata yeah. 2 years ago, didn't he, with the tape. And it was just like, oh, I can do that, but I don't need the tape. I can just do it with you.
He didn't need the tape this time.
The next match on the card was Kota Ibushi versus a resurgent young man in Juice Robinson, who's telling the story of his broken hand and how it is holding him back. But Kota is on fire at the moment. He can do no wrong. Juice pretty much can do no wrong. He's got so much heat with the fans. They absolutely adore him. And once again, a thoroughly enjoyable match. 13 minutes and 3 seconds, which would line Mr. Ibushi up for a US Heavyweight Championship shot after this tournament. But what did you think of it, Christy?
Oh, they're really fun together, aren't they? I think they have a lot in common. They're equally good at drawing people in. And they're both really entertaining and passionate. And Ibushi's maybe a bit more polished than Juice is, but he's getting there. And it was really fun. And I've got written down in my notes that moonsault, though.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous moonsault from the top post. Top of the post, not even the top rope. From the top of the post... As Rocky Romero said on commentary, how do you do that? It's not even flat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. To be fair, Kota has jumped off many things at Corican Hall. This was one of the lower ones, but it was still absolutely astounding to watch.
Beautiful, though.
Yeah, it's just an amazing person to watch wrestle. He's just so talented, got so much going for him at the moment. Yeah, probably glad he didn't sign with WWE.
he's had amazing matches, because I did a poll yesterday on my Twitter to ask who people thought the MVP so far was, and Ibushi won by far. He was like 15-20 votes ahead of the number two.
I think he's the ideal guy for these kind of tournaments, in the sense of, like, he's a highlight reel, human highlight reel. You know, they used to say that about Michael Jordan, didn't they, in basketball? But he is genuinely a human highlight reel. Everything he does looks so crisp and so perfect. And he just absolutely adores wrestling and tries to show it in its best light at all times, whether he's telling stories or having amazing matches.
Yeah, and he's a fun, nice guy. You don't sit there going, yeah, you're a great wrestler, but I dislike you as a person. So that also helps.
Yeah, Juice seems to be much the same way. No one has a bad word to say about Juice. You know, he's a friendly, fun-loving guy. And yeah, he's
with
awesome.
With bad hair.
With bad hair. You don't like the dreads?
No. No, not a white guy with dreads, no.
Too much appropriation.
Yeah. But other than that, he's great.
So you want a hair versus mask match next Fantastica Mania for
yes.
Juice? Okay. If any of you luchadors are listening out there? Anyway, moving on. The next match was Tetsuya Naito and Tomohiro Ishii. In their second match in the tournament, which put them on 2 points each, went Naito 1. Recommended by Meltzer, 4¾ stars, and the cage match users give it 9.13. Tomohiro Ishii and Tetsuya Naito had one of the best feuds in pro wrestling back in around about 2013, 2014 over the NEVER Openweight Championship. It made Ishii a player in New Japan Pro Wrestling. He was always good when he signed for the company coming over from War, but he was really a main event star after that series with Naito, and it was the one that kind of catapulted Naito into being a heel and sent him on this journey to Los Ignorables. This match was a throwback to the match, so I thoroughly enjoyed it, but the effort both of these guys put into it. What did you think of it, Christy?
Oh, this match was great. I knew that going in because they always have great matches.
Yeah.
Always. I love what they bring to each other as well because their characters are so opposite each other. Naito thinks he's the cool badass who doesn't care. But Ishii is that person. And Ishii knows that Naito is just pretending not to care. And he beats the caring out of him, basically. So it's wonderful. Rocky said that he thinks they respect each other so much because they both have the same goal of being the best. And that's why they do respect each other, but they don't show it in the ring.
No. Yeah. These two are absolute professionals. They are just, oh, what's the word? Perpetual motion to watch. Just absolutely stunning. And I love the fact that they have differing styles. I did see someone, I can't remember who it was, point out on Twitter that Ishii doesn't have matches that are as good with people who are the same style as him. And I kind of like this illustrates that. You know, Naito and Ishii are coming, trying to get to the same point from two different places, not just attitude-wise and character-wise, but also storyline-wise and wrestling style-wise. And that's why these feuds work so well together.
Yeah, they're a great foil for each other.
Yeah.
Also because Ishii is the cold, cool guy, whereas Naito is smiling while Ishii is chopping his chest off, you know?
Yeah.
Naito is a bit crazy. It's like he's enjoying the pain because he knows that it's going to be worth it in the end.
Yeah.
And Ishii is like, pain? What pain?
Yeah. One of the things that, like, one of the iconic images of me in my head, and I can still see it in my head, of watching their feud, when Naito had his comeback match against Ishii in 2014 for the NEVER Openweight Championship, and I'm pretty sure it was at Dontaku in Tokyo, and it was the night that Nakamura defended against Tanahashi, and the babyfaces were having a real hard time, and Naito was going booed out the building, and he didn't know how to cope with it, and just turned and started spitting at the audience and shouting at them, and Ishii just stood there and waited and waited and then just destroyed him. And it's just like that catalyst that has created this tension between these two wrestlers has been astounding, and it's just so well done. Moving on then to the main event for this particular night, night four, was Kenny Omega, who successfully defended the IWGP Heavyweight Champion, but it's not a championship match. It was two champions. You wish this one. Hiroki Goto, the NEVER Openweight Champion, the current one, lost to Kenny Omega. I believe you're quite fond of Mr. Goto.
Just a little, maybe.
What did you think of this one, Christy?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, I knew I was going to love it. And I've rewatched this. I rewatched all the matches this morning, and I still got excited for this one, even though I've seen it three times, maybe.
Yeah.
One's the original, one's to GIF it, and then third one for this show. So it was great. They work so well together, and Kenny really enjoys it. You can tell he enjoys working with Goto and turning it into something special, some kind of story. And the chair moments had me laughing. Especially because Goto was smiling after it because the crowd was booing him and he was totally into it. He was like, okay. He was like, sit down, Kenny, with your stupid jumps. And he threw a chair at his face and I just loved that.
It was, Good. I'm kind of watching Kenny Omega closely because you're near the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. There is the theoretical target on your back in the storyline of the tournament, mm-hmm. but you do have to do something different with what he'd done in the previous nights. I haven't watched a lot of the tag matches and the run-up to the tournament matches because I just haven't had the time, but I have noticed he's going back to his house show types for the tag matches, trying to take some pressure off and have a joke along because, you know, there's a lot of pressure. That storyline about Okada, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a moment or two, the pressure's come off and everything changes. Kenny's telling the opposite story. The pressure's come on, and how does he cope with it? And that's a really interesting narrative to say, just as part of the bigger narrative of where Bullet Club's going and where the championship defenses are going.
Yeah, and I think that's also interesting in this match because wrestling Goto has nothing to do with all the other storylines.
No.
So for him, it might just be nice to have a wrestling match, no interference from the Bullet Club OG members. Still a reference to Ibushi with his moonsault off the barricade onto Goto.
Yeah.
But other than that, just a straight-up wrestling match with someone he has chemistry with. So I think that might be good for the champion as well as the wrestler.
Definitely, definitely. Right then, we move on to night 5, which opened with a match involving Jay White, and he won. Should we move on?
Good for Jay White.
Good for Jay White. Yeah, he had a very, very good performance.
He did really well against himself.
Yes, yeah. I think it was about 7 minutes too long, personally, but there you go. We move on to the second match, which was underrated. Didn't get the only one of these matches we talked about that didn't get a rating from Meltzer or from the cage match guys.
Aww.
But Yoshihashi versus Minoru Suzuki were really good. I thought they had a really good match. I really enjoyed it. And Yoshihashi is getting a bit of stick this tournament for not being very good, and I don't like it because I think he's very good. This one I kind of put in the... I think when I was doing the first one at the weekend when we did the first show with Marcus, I think I described Yoshihashi's match with Makabe as lumpy but good. And this falls into that lumpy but good category. I like the story. I thought it was well done. I thought the match was really, really cool. Kind of tells the story of what's going to happen in a couple of nights' time. Gives it a layup. Yoshihashi's got to prove himself in this tournament because this is the last chance saloon as far as the G1's concerned for him, unless he does something astounding in the next 12 months. So to make himself a regular in the G1, he has to do well, and he hasn't won anything yet. And Minoru Suzuki is Minoru Suzuki, and he's going to kill you. So what did you think of this one, Christy?
Well, Suzuki is going to do that, yeah. I love Yoshihashi versus Suzuki matches. I always enjoy them because Yoshihashi just makes such a good underdog, such a good person to beat up for Suzuki.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think Yoshihashi enjoys the matches with Suzuki as much as I do. But it's always great. No one looks more like an underdog than Yoshihashi does when fighting Suzuki.
No, that's true.
But that also makes his attempt to fight back all the better to me. We know he's not going to win normally. Mm. He knows he's not going to win normally. Suzuki doesn't think he's going to win, but he still tries his heart out. And it was even more special this time because Suzuki was so angry at having lost two matches. And he was going to make Yoshihashi pay for it, basically.
Yeah.
And that made for a wonderful story. And made for this win over Yoshihashi being a catalyst for the rest of the tournament for Suzuki.
Yeah.
So, and he almost kicked Kevin Kelly's ass, so that's also nice.
You don't like Kevin Kelly?
I do, but it's entertaining when they get beat up.
Yeah, I tell you what, the best thing about Impact Slammiversary has meant that Don Callis hasn't been on commentary for the G1.
Yeah, I do enjoy Rocky Romero jumping in.
Yeah, he's so enthusiastic. That's the main thing.
He makes funny jokes. And
yeah, makes funny jokes, doesn't talk about women's behinds.
He did call Desperado a troll, though.
Yeah,
I'm not cool with that.
I mean, a little bit of Chaos Suzuki Gun Heat, that's fine, so long as it's not, you know. He's not making jokes at Giano's mental health expense.
That is true.
So I could take Rocky over Don Callis. I could take anyone over Don Callis. Except Josh Matthews. Anyway.
Let's hope that never happens.
Well, you get Callis and Matthews on Impact Wrestling, and that's joyous. I haven't watched Slammiversary yet, purely on the grounds that it's got Callis and Matthews on commentary. 3 hours of my life I've listened, I'll never get back listening to them to battle on through this wrestling card that's happening in front of them. I wish they would just do... This is... Sorry to aside this, but when Impact was off UK TV, I'd download it from various places. And I found out the Canadian feed will put commentators on the left, crowd noise on the right.
Oh, so you can just...
So I could just watch the matches without listening to Josh Matthews wittering instant on about it, and just made the product so much better. It was amazing. But anyway, that's an option. New company that's taken over Impact Wrestling in the UK, and I can't remember who you are, who get a weekly viewing figure of 5,000 as the highest. Please give us that as an option. It might improve your viewership by a long shot. Customized wrestling presentation. That's what I want. Anyway, moving on. Evil defeated Togi Makabe in a slobber knocker, as JR would say. This was pretty damn good. Makabe's been pulling a few things out as of late, and this was another good match. He doesn't have too many great matches, but he usually pulls them out in the G1. He saves his buddy for these particular moments. And kind of Evil's a kind of tricky one to go against when you've got two styles that are kind of similar. Evil's kind of like the 2018 version of Makabe in one sense. He's got a very similar straight ahead, smash mouth style. Likes going to the outside, very brawler orientated, big moves. Makabe in 2008 would have had some fantastic matches with 2018 Evil, but Makabe's still having great matches with him. What did you think of this?
I've really been enjoying Makabe, actually, and I didn't expect to.
No.
Beginning the tournament, because he's not usually someone I enjoy watching, but I thought his match versus Yoshihashi was really good, and I enjoyed this one. What stood out to me was the first thing I have written down on my notes is the "Hey Evil" comment from Rocky Romero, which is just... Do you remember what that was?
No, go on.
Evil came out and Rocky Romero was talking about something, and then he paused and he goes, "Hey Evil," and then he continued talking, and Kevin Kelly was like, "That is the most pro wrestling thing ever, that you can just sit there and go, hey, Evil, and then continue talking." And I don't know, I just remember it as being so pro wrestling.
Yeah, that's it. It is, hey, like, Evil. Yeah, it's one of those things that only happen at a wrestling show, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that's just a guy with rainbow hair and robes and lasers and a scythe. His name is Evil, and he's actually the nicest guy in LIJ.
He is, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's surprising how many nice wrestlers there are. I've usually found the scarier the wrestler, the nicer person they are.
Yeah.
Like Jazzy Gabbett, obviously, is a very good friend of mine, but she is a lovely, lovely human, despite being a terrifying monster of a wrestler who I've seen make people cry. Anyway.
Yeah, and then the match. Well, like I said, I've enjoyed him so far, Makabe, and I always enjoy Evil. He's one of my guys.
Mm.
Though I think his better matches are still to come.
Yeah.
He didn't get a single point yesterday in my MVP of the G1 question. No, not a single one. So I think he still has matches ahead of him that are going to impress people. I hope so, at least.
Cool. Right then, we move on to the semi-main event of that particular evening. That's night five. Hiroshi Tanahashi defeated Bad Luck Farley in 16 minutes and 27 seconds by DQ as the OG Bullet Club firing squad got their hands in and got their hands dirty and disqualified Bad Luck Farley through interference. Some people are starting to say this is oppressive and some people are starting to say they're not keen on it, but I can understand that. But equally, this is Bullet Club. You know, what it reminds me of the Horseman promo when Arn Anderson, when the Horseman came back on Monday Nitro, and Arn Anderson had come off injury. It was an incredible emotional night because it was in South Carolina, and they introduce all the Horsemen, and Arn Anderson goes, "Now you wanted us back, but be careful what you wish for, because we're not nice guys and we don't wear white hats. We're the Horsemen." you know, and there was that edge to anything can happen. And that's what's happened with OG Bullet Club. They essentially have just made that edginess back again. There is kind of an interesting dick to me. People have been saying, like, you know, well, you know, splitting off Bullet Club into different factions is just copying what the NWO did. But equally, the NWO became a corporate entity when they got Eric Bischoff involved with them. They suddenly became the establishment. And you could equally say, with Kenny Omega as the champion, with Bullet Club t-shirts being sold in Hot Topic, with all of these things, Bullet Club has become the establishment. They're just as established as Chaos or Suzuki Gun or LIJ. They are just have got the ear of the bookers in the parlance of the company. They are the establishment. They are easily are the establishment. So it maybe is time for somebody to kick back against that. And that's what intrigues me about this storyline. It's giving life to three guys who weren't going nowhere but needed a spark to make sure they got somewhere. And this is absolutely astounding. I love the way they're using Tama Tonga and Bad Luck Fale and Tangaloa in this. What did you think of this matchup, and what do you think of the overall angle, Christy?
The angle doesn't bother me the way it bothers other people. I think that for them, the storyline is more important right now than winning G1 matches. Mm-hmm. And it also protects Fale and Tama because they can lose without really losing.
Yeah.
If you get what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got Fale, and he always gets lots of points, but are you going to give him lots of points this tournament? Do you want to do that? If you don't want to do that, then giving him his opponents these DQ wins works out well. You've got a way to have Fale lose, but still get his story over.
Yeah.
So I think that's what they're going for, with Fale at least. And with Tama Tonga, it's just the story that he doesn't care. He doesn't care about anything except the OG Bullet Club right now.
Yeah.
So he doesn't care about victories in the G1. He just wants to annoy people and make people take notice of them.
Yeah. And they've had support from AJ Styles, which I found very interesting. It'd be interesting to see if anyone managed to catch Finn Balor off record.
Yeah.
Because Finn Balor does keep his eye on New Japan storylines. He was hopping mad when they signed Captain New Japan to Bullet Club because he hated Captain New Japan.
I remember that video.
He despised him. He was all for flying back to Tokyo to beat the shit out of him.
Yes.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there if anyone manages to catch Finn Balor off guard or if there's comment from him on it. Be interesting.
And Tanahashi in this. I mean, Tanahashi is always great when he's playing the experienced guy who is using all the tricks to beat the big guy. He always has good matches with Fale. But he didn't need the DQ finish, but I think Fale needed the DQ finish.
Yeah, I think so.
That makes sense.
It's also like from what you were saying, look at the people they've got to protect in this bracket. You know, you've got Evil, you've got Suzuki, you've got Jay White, and Kazuchika Okada, and you're trying to build up Hangman Page. There's a bunch of people there that need some zing. And if you can, Bad Luck Fale doesn't need any more zing. He's a big guy who hits you really hard. You don't need to do an awful lot more with him than that. So it's a champ opportunity for them to make other people shine.
Yeah, and they've told us right now that Fale doesn't care about DQs. Tama doesn't care about DQs. So if you give Fale a couple of DQs, no one cares.
Yeah, true. Right, main event of night five was Kazuchika Okada, and it's still a hard time saying not the IWGP Heavyweight Champion, you know, not including it in his title. The Rainmaker defeats Hangman Page to get back to winning ways. His first win in over 40 days, 17 minutes and 31 seconds. Adam Page has really impressed in this tournament. He's really impressed as a wrestler in the last 6 months, but specifically in the last 3 months. He's had some hot matches, and he's really starting to show how great he can be. And this was a prime example of how good he can be, because Okada made him work really hard, and he had a fantastic match. What did you think of this, Christy?
This was so much fun. I really liked these two together. I didn't expect them to have this great chemistry, but they did. And you said Rainmaker, but it's Balloon Maker. Right
Balloon
now.
Maker.
And he started at the Balloon Maker. He was smiling and he was toying with Paige. And Paige got really angry. I think he said something that he kicked Okada and he said, "This is Okada now."
Yes.
Like he wasn't happy.
Yeah.
He was disappointed in Okada, that this was the Okada he was facing. And then slowly throughout the match, you could see Okada change back more into the Rainmaker and take it more serious than he did before. It's like Paige was taunting him.
Mm.
And they got dueling chants as well. So Paige was really over during this match.
Yeah, he was. And what are you thinking? What are your thoughts been of the last 40 days of Okada as he's developed this character change and been more relaxed, smile a lot more, taking things a bit easier, and he's now starting to crank things up again?
I like it. I like the Balloon Maker. I enjoy watching him have fun because it's been years for him of being the cool, calm leader, the champion, and now he's able to let go a bit more.
Yeah.
I wish for him that it couldn't have been during the G1, that he could have had a bit more time, because the G1 is not a tournament you just have fun during. And
no.
He can't lose 5 matches being the Balloon Maker, you know? But it's been fun, and I look forward to seeing how he turns back into the Rainmaker and if it's a temporary thing or if it's going to stick.
Okay, then. Well, we move on to the last night of this 3-night run at the Hall. Kurikan was rocking on this night, and it opened up with Tori Yano defeating Kota Ibushi in 8 minutes and 23 seconds in a defensive wrestling masterpiece, is all I've got to say about this, especially from Kota Ibushi, who at one point did a standing moonsault with his hands taped together. This is that kind of match. It was as insane as you could possibly think. This was absolutely breathtaking, and I love both guys equally for very, very different reasons, but I really enjoyed this. What did you think of it, Christy?
That is such an Ibushi thing to do, though. To do a perfect moonsault with his hands taped together. I looked at this, and I was like, this is the match Ibushi is looking forward to the most. I mean, Kenny Omega, okay, but wrestling Toriyano and having
business.
Fun. Yeah. And being ridiculous and taping your hands together and doing several moves and being awesome. I just knew this was going to be great. It's like Ibushi was saying, come on, Yano, let's play. But Yano was being serious. He was being straight cut Yano right now.
Mm.
But Ibushi wanted it to be more fun. And eventually Yano realized that he had to be his cheating self to win. that's what he did.
Yeah, it's different story than with Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah,
Zack was trying to get the wrestler out of Toru, whereas Kota was trying to get the fun out of Toru. Right, then we move on to the second match of that evening, which was recommended by Cage Match 8.02. Meltzer hasn't got to these clearly. Sonata defeated Zack Sabre Jr. in 10 minutes and 45 seconds. A very, very good wrestling match, as you'd expect from these two. Just clash of styles that just work so well. But Sonata tried to play the wrestling game for the first part of the match and did very successfully, but he returned to his submission aerial crossover attack to take the victory. What did you think of this one, Christy?
It was fun. I like that Sonata is basically beating people at their own game.
Mm.
He beat Tama Tonga by a roll-up by being sneaky. And then he beats Zack Sabre Jr. after wrestling him for an entire match.
Yeah.
Who would choose to wrestle Zack Sabre Jr.? And you didn't expect him to beat him, but he stayed with him, and he was able to wrestle with Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah, this was a very, very good matchup, and it was a lot of fun to watch this clash of styles that work so well together. You know, Sonata is no slow coach when it comes to mat wrestling. Zack Sabre is probably the best mat wrestler in the world, with a few exceptions. But yeah, this just works so well. Right, the next match was Tetsuya Naito versus Juice Robinson. This group is so loaded. You know, Tetsuya Naito and Juice Robinson any other year would main event, but it didn't. This was only the third block match on the card. But it was very, very good again. Naito and Robinson. Robinson really pushing the buttons on that babyface kind of run with the broken hand. It's like watching Ricky Morton in the 80s where the Russians would destroy him for 20 minutes, and then Ricky to Robert, and Robert would come clean house, and it was, you know, that kind of matchup. This is kind of the similar kind of thing with Juice Robinson. He's really getting an awful lot of support from the crowd. This broken hand may be the best thing that ever happened to him. What do you think of this particular matchup?
They were really fun together, and you could tell that they were having fun as well. Naito admitted beforehand that he was looking forward to facing Juice because they used to tag together.
Mm-hmm.
But you couldn't tell from Naito that he was having fun because he was really mean during the entire match. And I think that's why it worked as well, because it allowed Naito to show that, yes, he's strong Kilo, and yes, he wanted to have a fun match or whatever, but he targeted Juice's hand from the first second.
Mm.
And he was really mean about it. He cared more about winning than anything.
Yeah.
And that showcases what Naito is about right now. Yes, he's fun. Yes, he's tranquilo, but he wants to win.
Yeah, it's interesting, really, to see the development of Juice Robinson, the development of Tetsuya Naito, because when Tetsuya came back from the second excursion to CMLL after those matches with Ishii, where he kind of like fell out with the audience, and he came back with this Tranquilio character, Juice Robinson was on the receiving end of his lackadaisical, as Alex Watt put it at the time, no f**ks Naito approach to pro wrestling.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting and fun to see where these two have gone in that time period. You're only talking about, you know, 18 months, aren't you? 2 years nearly. And it's astounding what they've both achieved.
And Juice is just getting so good.
I mean,
Juice is wonderful as this injured underdog who's being tortured by Naito, who's aiming for his hand on every move he's doing, even ones that normally hit him in the chest or in the head or whatever. And he suffers through it and he fights back and the entire crowd is behind him and he loses, but he can lose because he's injured and it's Naito. So
yeah.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Something just popped into my head. In fact, actually, it's closer than I think. Bret Hart wrestled in a very similar way in his heel turn in the mid-1990s, just before he joined WCW in the year before that, where he founded the Hart Foundation, much in the same way as like Naito's founded LIJ. I'm wondering if there's been any influence there, because Bret would be absolutely clinical as a heel and would lay in drop kicks to knees and wrists and stuff, because that, you know, he wasn't just wrestling the Five Moves of Doom matches that he used to wrestle. He was being much more creative. And I'm wondering if that's had any influence on Naito.
Maybe
so. Anyway, the second final, well, the semi-final match of night six was Kenny Omega versus Tama Tonga. This one was really, really anticipated by a lot of New Japan fans. 9 minutes and 55 seconds. It ends in a DQ, but it only furthers the story. You know, a year ago when they laid this out, it was a year ago that Tama Tonga wrestled Kenny Omega in a Block A match, I think it was. Again, at Currican Hall, I believe. And they had a really, really good wrestling match where Tama was kind of challenging Kenny for the leadership of Bullet Club, because things weren't okay with Bullet Club back then, and they certainly aren't now. And this plays on that storyline. As Kevin Kelly said, he balled it up, he put it away until the moment was ready to strike. And as Tama Tonga said this week on his Twitter feed, it took three of us to destroy eight of them. We are stronger. We are going to do better things because Bullet Club is weak. So he's doing some very dark things, and this is interesting character development, but Kenny had a cracking match with him before then. What did you think of this?
I think this match was really interesting because I don't think it was about the wrestling so much as about the storyline and the character development. It wasn't a five-star classic, maybe, but I think it told a very interesting story. And I think the match was also more about Tama Tonga than Kenny Omega, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Tama was just very emotional and he kept talking. And some of the things he said were very interesting to me. Like, look at what you did. We could have been something special together, but you had to ruin it. Like, he was really hurt almost that Kenny wasn't what he expected him to be, that he didn't live up to the image Tama had in his mind of the perfect leader. He also asked at one point, is this your hero? Kenny is supposed to be a hero. He's supposed to be a role model. Well, I don't respect him. That's what Tama was going into the match. Not again, he doesn't care about the G1. He didn't really care about winning so much as beating Kenny.
Yeah. I think as well, like, this goes back into the history. What does Tama expect a leader of Bullet Club to be? Well, he expects a leader of Bullet Club to be Prince Devitt, to be AJ Styles. You know, when back in the WrestleTalk days, I was listening to Gavin Duenas and Paul Taylor talking about AJ Styles coming into WWE, and they were saying, well, I hope he's not a heel. And I'm like, why not? He's one of the best heels in wrestling. What are you talking about? He's absolutely amazing as a heel, but they'd never watched him in New Japan. They had no understanding of how good he could be as a heel. And similarly with Finn Balor, when people say, oh, he's such a good babyface, but he says, yes, but he's so much better as a bad guy. You know, Finn Balor in 2014, 2013, when he was making that run at Okada for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Oi, oi, Okada! That was one of the best promos I've heard in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And the fact that, you know, he got over so well as a heel after being a beloved babyface. But look who taught him how to be a heel. It was Gedo and Jeddo who taught him how to be a heel back in the early days of his very first IWGP Junior Heavyweight run when he was part of Gedo and Jado's unit. He had the best teachers. And Kenny Omega is a completely different character. I'm not saying he's the right guy or the wrong guy for Bullet Club as a leadership, but it's a different set of circumstances and a different kind of leader. Whereas Prince Devitt was always portrayed to be an opportunist mercenary, and AJ Styles, much the same, was considered to be technically superior to everyone else, but he would take shortcuts when he needed to. Kenny's kind of a different cat, and it's a different way. He wants to be the best bat machine. He wants to make the best matches. He wants to be the best wrestler. Well, that doesn't always fit with what Bullet Club, because Bullet Club is supposed to be a bunch of pirates. They take what they want. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's difficult to see where Tama would see show respect for someone like Kenny, who's not really... He took his opportunities when he got rid of AJ Styles, but that's really the only kind of treacherous, take what you need kind of deal he's done is since he's been leader of Bullet Club, isn't it?
Yeah, and Tama is very much about loyalty, about their group together.
Yeah.
Whereas Kenny Omega is focused on the outside. How many stars am I getting? Is everyone watching my YouTube series? Is what are people saying about me on the internet? And nothing of that is wrong, but I don't think it's the original Bullet Club idea that Tama maybe had in mind.
No, I mean, you could say the same for the books as well. You know, the books are about selling t-shirts and selling merchandise, and so is Marty Skrull. And Cody was kind of, you know, when you look back to the Strong Style Evolve main event, they offer the leadership of Bullet Club to Cody, and he refuses it because he doesn't want to attack the Young Bucks and he doesn't really want to attack Kenny. You know, it was about mano a mano leadership issues, whereas someone's willing to create a coup for you and he refuses the throne. That's another reason why Tama's angry at the world. His other chosen one is doesn't want the job. You know, he puts his friends over leadership of Bullet Club, and to Tama, there's no greater thing. So why should they? You know.
Yeah, and everything is betrayal for him. Even Chase and Yujiro betrayed him in his mind.
Yeah, you know, and Chase and Yujiro didn't betray anybody.
No, that's the one thing I'm most angry about, that Chase and Yujiro got kicked in the...
Yeah, especially Chase. Yujiro not so
much. Poor Chase.
But again, I mean, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I mean, like, the pop that both of them got when they came out at Strong Style Evolved. You know, Yujiro and Chase work really ridiculously hard in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I don't think everybody sees what they do, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will admit I've not been the biggest Yujiro fan down the years. There are more interesting guys, and inevitably the females that he's with are always far more interesting than he is. But having said that, he's a workhorse guy and he's held the bottom end of the card together, and that's his job.
Yeah, and not everyone can be Okada.
No.
I think people forget that you have to have the Yujiros and the Chase Owens to make the Okadas and the Naitos look even better.
Yes, true. And, you know, Yujiro's first major run was a tag partner with Tetsuya Naito in Chaos. You know, people forget that. Naito and Yujiro were Chaos guys to start with when they were young. They were essentially in the same position that Sho and Yo were 7 years ago. So, we move on to the main event. Tomohiro Ishii defeats Hirooki Goto in 18 minutes and 15 seconds in a battle of the Chaos Heavyweights. As our friend Simon Heath would say, a dad fight of the highest order. What did you think of this, Christy? Because I know you might be slightly sad that Goto lost.
I wasn't really, actually, because I expected this going in, because Goto has won the last three, I think. So I was like, oh, Ishii's going to win. It's fine. It really was a dad fight, though. And with these two, it's basically that all the time. And because they like each other so much, they hit each other harder. That's the whole Goto Ishii thing.
Yes.
Like, I like you, so I'm going to punch you extra hard today.
Yes.
And that makes for such great matches. It's just, it was from the first second, it was hard hitting and just them through and through.
Yes, it was. There's not a lot to say about it. It kind of does what it says on the tin. It's got Hirooki Goto and Tomohiro Ishii hitting each other really hard. We've seen it a lot of times before. We'll probably see it a few times again, but it was fantastic. It was lovely. It was nice to see them getting up to their old tricks. But yeah, Ishii is just such a thrilling guy to watch as well. He sets up so much drama and always brings it for the G1, everything he does. He's such a good tournament wrestler. I watched him in the US Championship tournament last year from Long Beach, and he was the star performer. You know, he got to the final with Kenny Omega, but he was just absolutely astounding in that tournament.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, I'm obviously partial to Goto, but without Ishii, I don't think Chaos would be the way they are. You have a guy with so much experience and so many fans just always in the wings to make something happen and to give someone a great match. And this was great. It's at the top of my list so far.
Excellent. Your favorite match of the tournament so far?
So far, yeah. It's either this one or the Goto Kenny Omega one. Obviously Goto on 1 and 2.
I'm kind of erring towards the Hangman Page Okada one and the Yano Zack Sabre Jr. one. Those are my two favorites so far.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Okada Page as well.
Yeah, those are the first six nights. I have watched night 7 and there was some good stuff on there. Actually, just without giving away what happened on night 7, I think they're a bit flat by the time it got to night 7. They didn't seem as alive on night 7 as the previous three nights. I think that Currican Hall crowd are something very special and they always want to perform for them.
Or maybe they all watched the Goto Ishii match and were tired.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. We covered 4, 5, and 6, or nights 4, 5, and 6 of the G1 Climax 28 tournament from 2018. So I'd like to thank Christy for your time today. Thank you for coming to talk to us. I hope you've had fun.
I had a lot of fun, actually.
Excellent. Where can we find you on social media at your various accounts?
Oh, gosh. My main account is Smark Infested. And then you've got Wrestling Sexism, which is where I talk about issues, talking about sexism in the wrestling community. And then there's NJPW GIFs, which is my New Japan GIF account.
There you go. And you can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. And you can find the show at Troopany Show on Twitter as well. Do you do Facebook?
I don't. I only use Facebook for family members.
Fair enough. I'm much the same myself. I don't even really exist on Facebook. I have to do editorial meetings for Total Wrestling.
I barely go there these days.
Yeah. And you can find us on Patreon as well, at The Troopany Show. Please do pledge to us and we can help keep The Troopany Show free forever for everyone. We will be back probably on Monday, might be on Sunday. Depends on when I get it all edited. We'll be looking at nights 7, 8, and 9 with, I believe, Chelsea Spollen and Mo Chatra and some other people, whoever is free, on Saturday afternoon when we do the recording. But we've got plenty of wrestling to watch this week. And for now, the G1 is kind of up in the air and we will see what happens. But thank you very much to Christy today. Take care and we'll see you soon. Bye.